51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. And we start with our film reviews on this Thursday evening. First up is Family Romance LLC, Werner Herzog's tale of a real Japanese company which hires out its staff to play fake friends and relatives. You may have heard the director speaking to us on last night's programme. Next up will be The Old Guard, an action thriller starring Charlize Theron as the leader of a band of immortal warriors who find themselves on the run from Big Pharma and the CIA. And finally, Blackwater Abyss, a low-budget croc horror film set in Australia. Joining me here in studio, Sir Taff McGuire, Stephen Boyd, down the line. There's only one place to start with this week, and that's Werner Herzog and Family Romance LLC. It's an amazing premise, which is based on a real-life company called Family Romance,
yeah,
Sarah.
And companies as well. Mm. It's not just the one. So we have this head of the company who's been around for 10 years, Ishii. So he is a real person, Ishii Yuchi, and he also plays himself, but in a drama by Werner Herzog, where about 85% of what happens is made up. And it is indeed a drama. It is a clear documentary feel throughout. And with it being a drama rather than a documentary, we're able to explore all sorts of possible limitations or how far we can push people acting as family members, as mourners, and we're able to see and therefore think about what roles we ourselves might play when we're in these various roles.
The basic setup here, Stephen, I suppose, is the father-daughter or the fake father and daughter relationship that's at the very heart of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. This kind of really strange but quite sensitive and emotional strand at the heart of the film. So at the beginning of the film, we see Yuchi playing this kind of tender father to a 12-year-old girl called Mahiro at the Festival of the Cherry Blossoms. But, you know, in the next scene, we realize that Yuchi's actually been hired by that girl's mother to play the role of the father I'm not sure if we know what happened to him, but he disappeared after 16 months or so of the young girl's life. And this kind of touching strand, which is kind of repulses you a little bit at the beginning, draws you in to the point where Yuchi becomes this hugely empathetic character. And he himself starts to kind of love this girl as if she is his daughter, and vice versa. And it's hugely strange and beguiling and touching. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, and Stephen mentions there, Sarah, that, you know, he starts finding himself really getting to build a relationship. When we say falling in love with it, falling in love in a father-daughter type of way. And there's a kind of a little tension between the mother and the fake father as well.
Yeah.
But how does Herzog was adamant with me last night that he wasn't attempting to blur the boundaries, that this is a fiction and that's that, but it is hard sometimes to get what's the difference between fact and fiction.
Absolutely. This is something that Ishii was really agonised about. You know, that's the point at which the film really starts to unravel, when he as a person sort of breaks down, is like, well, are my relationships real? So, I mean, the questions that he's going through and the things that he's thinking about and wondering are legitimate questions to have when this is a thing that exists. I mean, it's not just the father-daughter thread is sort of the emotional, gives a gravitas and sort of, you know, this is the hook upon which we hang other possibilities. But there are many other possibilities explored. Someone's hired as a mourner. Someone is hired to take a verbal tongue lashing for letting the train be 20 seconds late.
I loved that particular one.
It was great.
It's this guy in the train station. Yeah, he's in the train station and he's allowed the train to go 20 seconds early, in fact, which is a huge problem in
disgrace.
Terms of the knock-on
national
effect.
Front pages about having to apologise, all that sorts of things. But there are loads of those moments. There are ones where there's a woman who hires people to pretend a paparazzi to elevate her public profile, and it works.
And another woman who's a lottery.
And there's another lady, I think.
Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, I think, sorry, Sean, I was just going to say the same thing, who was a lottery winner and wants that feeling again. So she hires Family Romance LLC to come and, you know, arrive at her door with some cheerleaders as if she's won something again. You know, she hasn't won anything. It's amazing.
Yeah. And there's a kind of a sadness in that as well, it has to be said. But this is classic Herzog territory, Stephen, really, isn't it? The back catalogue is full of films that what's real and what is fake are hard. It's hard to tell them apart.
Yeah, like it's hard to encapsulate Herzog in a sentence or in a certain aesthetic, but something that's there throughout his whole, all in the last 50 years, is this strange combination sometimes between drama and documentary. fiction and non-fiction, real life and fantasy. I mean, like, there's so many examples of that stand out from the 90s. Little Dieter Needs to Fly, that great documentary about the German World War II pilot, who he kind of gets to enact his his own capture in Vietnam, and then he remakes it as a Hollywood film with Christian Bale as that character. So yeah, that's something that Herzog does brilliantly throughout his whole career. And this is the same. It's very, very hard to detach yourself from this, and as if it is a fiction, it really does feel like you're watching something that has only slightly been twisted, but it probably has been twisted quite a bit.
Yeah, you have to be patient with it, though, I think, Sarah. It's safe to say the opening 10 to 15 minutes, when you're not sure what the relationship is between the father daughter, it's quite a slow watch.
Yeah, and you really have to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. There is a huge sense of unease throughout the film, where, you know, people are being hired, and you're obviously concerned about the ethics of this. You know, at what point do these relationships end? Is it really okay to have someone stand in as your father? All those kinds of things abound. As well as that, like, there are just some very strange moments that are unrelated to the plot points we had mentioned that really add actually nothing to the story. So I'm thinking of one instance where there's a three-year-old child who accompanies Mihiro and Ishiyushi, her father, for a whole day. And you're like, where are the parents? And that's something you just have to become comfortable with. And a lot of these side stories about the individual instances and the potential for these companies just really add nothing. So if you were from the beginning ready to ponder, open-minded, and like, right, I'm going to think about all the possibilities that when various acting roles we play in life, then it'll be enjoyable. If you're here for just like pure plot advancement and, you know, to learn all about something, you're not really going to get a huge amount. There's a lot of distraction and a lot of slowness to really find out, okay, wait, who are these people? What is the relationship going on here, and how did it come to be?
Well, ultimately then, did it work for you, Stephen?
I really loved it. I love everything Herzog does, I think. It's a 4 out of 5 for me. It's a beautiful, strange and kind of touching commentary on loneliness in Japan and in urban life. And yeah, I just love Herzog. So it's 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5 from you. And the cherry blossoms are beautiful as well.
Yeah,
Sarah.
I mean, there's some beautiful aerial footage as well. So they're lovely cinematic flourishes, which are sort of palate cleansers as well. So it's not just oddities and confusion and discomfort. Beautiful soundtrack as well. So I'd say it's a 3 out of 5 for me because of the bizarre elements and a little bit of a slow speed.
Right, so it didn't quite your boat as it did Stephen's. Right, let us move on then to The Old Guard. Based on a graphic novel, Stephen, of the same name, an action thriller about a group of immortal warriors who have acted as altruistic mercenaries throughout history. Now, that sounds like a fairly promising premise, doesn't it, Stephen?
It sounds hugely exciting, Sean. I was very much looking forward to it, but unfortunately, it's not actually as exciting as it sounds. Now, there's some really fun elements to it, but the film just doesn't kind of It just doesn't hit it off with what it's trying to do. So Charlize Theron plays Andromache, or Andy the Scythian, and she is an ancient warrior who's the first person to become immortal. And as time passes, she's joined by others, played by Luca Marinelli, has Nikki, Marwan Kenzari, Matthias Schoenaerts, who some people might know, the Belgian actor, is in there as well. So there's a really quite good cast. Yes. And this team of immortals is, sorry, Sean, they're kind of set up by the CIA who want their secrets. And one of the CIA characters is played by Chiwetel Ejiofor. And they're in cahoots with Big Pharma. So basically, the characters go on the run after they've been set up, and they try and recruit a new immortal, played by Kiki Layne. That character's called Niall Freeman.
Yeah, that's a very important.
They go on the run.
That's a very important point, really, isn't it, Sarah? Where the Kiki Layne character is, because initially we see a scene where all of the immortals are killed and they all stand back up because they can do that. That's the special power they have, and then we're in a real life situation in Afghanistan with the Kiki Layne character. And she gets killed, and you think, oh, this is different, but then it's not different.
No, and actually, it's a big amount of trouble for her. She's working in the US Marine, and it's very spooky for a lot of people how she almost dies and then comes back to life without a scar. And so one power, you know, throughout the film, we kind of learn additional powers the immortals have in a way that kind of deviates from the perhaps more interesting elements of the story. But so we learn that all the immortals can communicate through dreams, sort of. So they all go to sleep at night and they dream of...
Sort of.
I mean, there's a lot of sort of powers hour in this film. It's like, can they do that? Oh, I guess they can. But yeah, so we have this character Niall, played by Kiki Layne, you may recognise from If Beale Street Could Talk. She is dreamed of, and all the immortals come and rescue her. And then Niall has to become part of this group, and that's quite an interesting element, because now she's to leave her family behind, because if the family were to realise who she were, they could sell her to Big Pharma. You know, she has to become used to being, you know, being disconnected and being a murdering machine and never ever dying and coming to terms with that. And that's an interesting component.
Andromache, the city, and I love the fact that Charlize Theron's character shortens that to Andy. It's a great way to say very difficult name. Well, here is Andromache, the city, and explaining to Kiki Layne's character Niall what has happened to her.
Who are you?
I lead a group of immortals. An army, I guess. Soldiers. Fighters like you. Look. You've got questions, kid. I get it. You want answers? Get back in the car.
Interesting that it really puts Charlize Theron and Kiki Layne centre stage here. It gives the two big action roles to the two female leads.
Absolutely. And that's, like I was mentioning earlier, is really interesting. Like, how do you learn, how do you come to terms with this big part of your life, and how do you mentor someone into being a killing machine when you're constantly on the run from Big Pharma? So that's rather than that being something which is, you know, develops social gravitas or a level of interest, it really is just about badass lines, like you heard there, like sort of patronising talk, referring to her as kid, and, you know, like, you know, those sort of lines, and like explosions and then dubstep and then not looking behind you, really. You know, it just sort of goes into trite action cliches rather than what is an interesting story that, of course, like, is an action film and is in some ways a thriller. So in that way, it was a disappointment.
I think that's...
Go ahead,
you hit
Stephen.
The nail on the head there. Look, trite action cliches is exactly what this is. And like, Netflix are now churning out this kind of movie, you know, a couple of them almost every month. And they follow a formula to a T, which is throw a bucket of money at some big stars, cast a group of international actors to appeal to the widest possible audience, shoot it cheaply, and, you know, adapt cheaper or lesser known properties. And without Charlize Theron, this film would be kind of pretty pretty soulless and empty. But it, along the lines of movies like Bright, Extraction, Triple Frontier, if anyone knows what I'm talking about, on Netflix, that these big movies that have big stars but are ultimately, you know, completely empty.
What about the pharma aspect of the story? Stephen Merrick is the character here, played by Harry Melling, which we'll all know from Harry Potter.
From Harry Potter, he's Dudley Dursley. He's grown up and more of an asshole than ever.
Yeah, he's a big, very nasty bit of work.
The youngest, what does he call himself? Yeah, I'm the youngest pharma billionaire. And it's like, wow, we hate you already. Well done, director.
Which I guess is the point, though. We are supposed to hate him, but there's no grey area here. Maybe around the character of Copley, we'll come back to that. Yeah. But why did Big Pharma, what did Big Pharma want to do
Big
here?
Big Pharma want to have a drug which will make people never die. I guess it's sort of, in fact, an immortality drug, and they're very interested to find out what sort of DNA these people have. And rather doing it in an ethical way with the consent of the participants and working together for something mutually beneficial for humanity, they capture them and they steal their tissue, which is not very nice. So then, as you mentioned, that Copley, the CIA agent, who's played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, he had been, you know, his wife had died sadly by cancer. He believes this drug could save her. So then he captures these people and then is like, wait a second, capturing people may not be so great, and I have ethical concerns about this. So there's a bit of a grey area there.
So here's a scene between Copley, the Chiwetel Ejiofor character, and Stephen Merrick, the Harry Melling character. And Melling wanted to capture all of them and get them into his compound and do his experimentations, but they didn't quite manage to get all of them.
You've seen my research. Now you know they're for real.
What about the hard proof? Blood, tissue, bone, DNA.
Recovering an uncontaminated sample of the site proved impossible.
But you promised me hard proof.
There was an unanticipated amount of carnage. Footage.
No, the footage is a $2 million snuff film. It doesn't give her the how. I need all of them, Copley.
Oh. I think I can get you one.
No. No, not one. All.
These are extraordinary individuals. They are extremely resistant to capture.
There we There we go. That's Stephen Merrick, played by Harry Melling, and James Copley, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, in a scene there from the old guard, the Charlize Theron. She's an executive producer on this as well, which is part of the thing. But there's a whole other backstory going on about somebody she fought with way back in the mists of time,
yeah,
who was thrown down into the sea.
Yeah. And
the whole film seems to be...
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, sorry, get ready for a franchise. This isn't going to be a once-off. Like, I couldn't find anything confirmed there was a franchise, but presumably the money will be there, seeing as she's the producer and she's, you know,
definitely going to run and run, I think.
Yeah. And it clearly leads up to that in a way that is just so contrived and irrelevant to the rest of the film. It just, like, makes you want to roll your eyes so far back into your head, like your retina's detached.
Yeah, 2 hours and 5 minutes that this film is, and about the 2 hours and 4 minutes in, you get the setup for the second film in the franchise, and it seems as if it was the whole film just to set us up to watch the rest of the franchise. But what about the action sequences? Were they not worth it? Were they not well done, the fight sequences, Stephen?
I thought the action, this is why, if you want to watch a film like this, you want to watch it for amazing action sequences. This was kind of so prosaic and dull. It kind of surprised me, actually, that it felt a bit like I was watching a TV movie from 10 years ago sometimes. I didn't think there was a huge amount of money spent on some of those sequences. There wasn't a lot of CGI. Not that we need CGI, but perhaps in a film like this, you might. So I felt a little bit outdated there. And Gina Prince-Bythewood is a good director, but maybe she's not a director of films about immortal mercenaries throughout history who can do kung fu and stuff.
And the other thing we need partners to say, because you think if they're immortal, sure, there's no nothing's at stake. But in fact, they're only immortal for a period
of
time.
They're immortal, kind of.
Immortal
until they die.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Stars from you, Stephen.
2 out of 5. Go and watch Highlander instead.
Okay. And Sarah?
Yeah, same. 2 out of 5. Took even 45 minutes to decide what the film was actually about and then gave us flat action scenes.
Yeah, a little bit less might have got. We've got there quicker. We might have been less annoyed. Let us move on then to Blackwater Abyss. And this is a croc horror set in Australia. Latest cinema release. Unique genre, one would think. But believe it or not, this is the second croc horror film this year. Crawl was released last year. You think this is crocodilist, this movie,
you,
Sarah?
Anti-crocodile propaganda of the first order, absolutely. No. So what this film really is about is about the cinema's disregard for the clever animal that is the crocodile. So what this is about is that thankfully, the Northern Territories of Australia have banned shark culling. Crocodile numbers. So crocodile numbers have increased. A group of 4 dunderheaded humans wade in to crocodile territory, serve themselves up on a platter as hors d'oeuvres for this crocodile. And the crocodile dares, you know, sniff at them, and then this film is about how terrible that is and how we should feel for the humans. But I tell you what, they're shallow humans with nothing else going on, foolhardy as well, descend without proper into this cave without proper equipment, without telling where they are. So I say, go. I'm pro shark here. I would, of course, give me crocodile.
Let's have a listen to this. Is a kind of a little selection from the trailer, which kind of gives you the basic thing that Sarah has just told us.
What do you reckon?
Let's check it out.
What'd I tell you?
This is incredible, huh?
Hey.
What the hell is that? The cave's filling up.
The river must have burst its banks.
We're going to be in the water whether we like it or not.
And no one knows we're down here, right?
Does anyone have service?
It's only a short swim.
We got to swim out of here.
Did you miss something?
You cannot get in that
water. What choice do I have? Crocs are territorial. He's not going to be happy till we're all gone.
Whatever you do, don't splash.
Do not move a muscle.
Bernard Herrmann will be looking for money for that little bit of psycho at the end there. The music plays, does all the work, let's face it. But my favourite bit, I think, within that particular clip there was when they, one of the characters asks, whatever number of feet they are down onto the ground, anybody got service? Is your mobile phone got coverage? Yeah. And we can phone for help?
Idiots.
Yeah, it's fairly formulaic stuff, Stephen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these people, you really don't feel for them at all. I found myself hoping the Crocs would get on with the job because they go caving with no caving gear. They're wearing, you know, check shirts and T-shirts. It's also not cold underground, where crocodiles presumably wouldn't be able to function without the light of the sun. There's very little meat in the script. The characters are characterless, and the you know, pardon the pun, but the story lacks any kind of bite.
Woohoo!
So yeah, I kind of agree with Sarah. I felt like the Crocs themselves don't get much screen time, so I would imagine crocodiles all over the world won't be very happy with that.
Yeah.
And there's not very many scary moments either, which is what you want from this movie.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of croc horrors, I have to say.
Chekhov tells us that if you have a gun in Act One, you have to shoot the gun in Act Two. They'd set things up appallingly in this, you know, in the first sequence we're told about this torch will last for 120 hours. Well, that's going to run out of battery, isn't it, after 120 hours? And also one of the guys, make sure to bring your asthma inhaler with you, so we know there's going to be a problem with the asthma inhaler.
Join
the dots plotting here, Sarah.
Oh my gosh, to the nth degree. So we just, I mean, there's 10 minutes at the beginning which is sort of meant to set up us up to the characters, you know, create a warmth and perhaps some plot points which will be developed, and instead they all just sort of like make these minor and be like, yeah, oh, in remission from cancer, pregnant, have asthma, having relationship troubles. And it's like, all right, down the cave you go, you know. And then we're like, okay, well, something's presumably going to happen to that. And then not a whole lot does. It's like, oh, I'm having an asthma attack. And it's like, okay, yeah, great.
Yeah, well, but despite all of that, you know, say a wet Sunday afternoon or a wet Sunday evening, would it not entertain you for an hour and a half? It doesn't outstay its welcome. It's a good hour and a half, tight, over, except little tail at the end, perhaps, that could have been cut. But yeah, you know, it does. Doesn't overstay its welcome.
No, it's so slow. I mean, like, there's just nothing in there. And you're thinking, even like, it's really slow at getting started, developing. I mean, as Stephen mentioned, it's not even scary. Okay, like, so actually, John, you know, Werner Herzog on the show last night was saying there's a problem with the films that get funded, you know, funds that are about the human condition that are deep. They don't get funded. Instead, what gets funded is ones with CGI and great computer graphics. And like, this film is the problem with filmmaking. That these are the kind of films that get but get made and get attention. I mean, like, this is a main option people have for going to cinema rather than something else. So in that regard, like, and also the CGI isn't even good. Like, it's like really it's actually funny that people that they expect us
some
to believe
some of the crocodiles are
mad.
Sorry, Sarah. So
go ahead, Stephen.
Sorry. I was going to say some of the crocodiles are kind of Jaws level bad in terms of, you know, the shark in Jaws. They're kind of little models just going across the top of the water. And I know they look a bit like that, but it looks cheap. It really
and
looks
glowing
cheap.
Eyes as well. And the wounds they're meant to have. Like, it fondly misunderstands how crocodiles work.
Right. And the other thing is the shark in Jaws has John Williams music underneath it. So therefore, it's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Stars from you, first of all, Sarah.
It's one. It gets a point for being like funny but bad. So, I mean, if you want to not watch something, or maybe just have a laugh at how terrible some things can be, watch
it. Okay, you didn't enjoy it, clearly. And Stephen?
I won as well. And I would say, like, you know, go and check out something like Lake Placid if you want to see a good croc movie.
All right. That's Sarah Taffin-Guire and Stephen Boyd speaking to us this evening about Blackwater Abyss, The Old Guard and Family Romance, LLC.